Hello and welcome to VHTV, your guide to talent, culture, and the finance side of the space startup ecosystem. My name is Brian Majeure of Ad Astra Talent Advisors, and I'm also joined by Matt Jurtzen from Better Everyday Studios.
Hello.
And also joined with us is Justice Killian of Space Capital.
Hey, good to be here.
Thanks both. So today we're going to talk about how other industries can be helpful guides for scaling space. So to lay a little bit of the foundation here, you know, we often think of the space industry kind of forging a new frontier, but really, you know, it's not the first industry to grapple with innovation, scaling, disruption, and just like generally creating an industry from nothing. So curious to hear what your thoughts are about what lessons we can learn from other sectors, maybe automotive or aerospace, and what do you find particularly relevant to guiding space startups when we can look to other industries that have maybe been there before?
So I can jump in right out of the gate. As an investor, we often look to analogs and look to history to try to contextualize the development curve of a technology, market adoption, you know, product roadmap, all of these things. And so it's definitely something that, you know, I think about quite a bit. Some of, you know, the most prominent examples that I think people often point to when they look at sort of how space could develop and some lessons learned, you know, semiconductors, the internet, telecommunications. And I think that there's sort of like three, you know, maybe initial insights that are relevant for space more broadly. And so the first one is really like government as like the anchor customer, right? And so I think that that is quite true today, and the government has shifted to be, you know, contracting more services as opposed to building exquisite systems. But, you know, DARPA was this anchor customer for semiconductors. You know, the National Science Foundation was for the internet. So, you know, space technology companies, whether you're in launch or satellites or, you know, orbital transfer vehicles or the lunar surface, like the government really plays an anchoring role. Ecosystem development is also super important. So, you know, semiconductors matured when, you know, the government helped foster entire ecosystems. So this was research institutions, this was manufacturing capabilities. You know, space is going to require similar capabilities, you know, recognizing that that infrastructure is really important to many different industries, understanding that regulatory frameworks need to exist, prioritizing workforce development and training and setting it as a priority. And then the third one I would point out is sort of this idea of standardization and interoperability. And I think that really goes to like scaling the industry. You know, the first two, I think we're doing an okay job with. The third one, I don't think that we're, you know, doing a great job with. So, you know, the telecom industry thrived when global standards were, you know, put in place, you know, how we allocate spectrum and, you know, how we're going to be able to connect. And I mean, that's happening in real time with literally space-based systems connecting with terrestrial systems. And since there is a framework, we actually can now think about managing trade-off and how these two, you know, different technologies work together. The same is true with standardizing how you integrate satellites into launch vehicles and different componentry. Right now, a lot of that's very bespoke, and it does sort of slow adoption, and it prevents that transition from largely a government-anchored ecosystem to a more thriving commercial ecosystem. So I've got some other thoughts. Those were sort of a few, you know, out of the gate from some of the big established technologies that have really gained global adoption.
Yeah, kind of building off of what you were saying, you know, really centering on that idea of the ecosystem that exists is something that I first thought of when we were looking at this question. And, you know, going back to the automotive industry and the aviation industry and kind of some of the decisions that have to be made inside a company based on that ecosystem. You know, if you think when Ford first started developing, they were very vertically integrated. They were like making it all themselves. And there's many examples in aviation as well. And that was because there was not an established ecosystem. There were not a lot of common other places that they could go because nobody could do that. And then you fast forward, and now they're nowhere like that. You know, they have a wide distributor, you know, or supplier network that they're pulling on. They're not making the tires anymore. That can go too far. But I think when we look at right now, I think even the space industry right now is in some of that pivot, where even if you go back, at least from my point of view, or what I saw, if you go back just a few years when we had that huge boom in there, what was there, like 100 different small launch vehicle startups that existed at one point, and it seemed like it was a given that if you were building a rocket, you were building the engines. If you were building a rocket, you were kind of doing it all yourself. And it seems like as the fallout from many of those companies have gone away, and it seems like now we're starting to see the beginnings of, it's much more expected that you're going to buy this from there, this from there, and you more focus on what's the thing that I'm going to do, and I'm going to take advantage of an ecosystem in order to help me do my thing. So I think that's one of the things that companies can think about, is looking to history of like the various stages of maturity of an ecosystem, and then use that to make decisions of themselves, of like the build versus buy decision and that kind of stuff. And you can only look to historical examples because it's hard to understand like in real time what's happening.
Yeah, this is really good. And I was also liking what you were mentioning and bringing in justice about like government's involvement and how it can both lift up, or I think most of your examples were kind of where it's necessary or very useful to create some standards, of provide like infusion of funding to kind of build up this ecosystem. Curious to hear maybe if you have any like favorite examples of where that's worked really well, or maybe where that hasn't worked so well. And I guess how I'm thinking of like right now, or maybe not working so well, is hearing about like getting regulatory approval for launch and how all the tensions between the FAA and SpaceX and watching these like little Twitter battles almost about it is very interesting, right? Like, where do we say that the government's really helpful and useful, and then where do we say, okay, we're maturing beyond what government where it was useful, and we need to kind of get out of the way a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I can't, claim to be an expert in this area, but I think that there, is precedent that the government is great at helping set sort of standards and enforcing those standards. USB is a great example where, there was industry association and government that came around and said, this is going to be a standard interface that, all, phone companies are going to utilize, and it, drove adoption at a large scale. I think there's a similar history there with the ESPA ring, and government involvement in setting that standard with launch providers. The ability for that to then, sort of translate across, all different types of integration and components, that I think will be, important for the government. It's hard to put that onus on a company to say, we're going to be the standard. You sort of have to control like 80, 90% of the market to become a standard. And that sort of goes contrary to, competition. And so companies erect these, sort of barriers to competition by having their own proprietary connector or proprietary process. And so, government can sort of force that common denominator around how we're going to play and how we're going to integrate and sort of what are those guardrails. I think in terms of like regulatory process and removing barriers to experimentation and innovation, we existed in this world where the government led a lot of these systems. They were using public funding to build launch vehicles, to launch satellites, to launch humans. And so the risk tolerance using that public funding became quite low over time as we had some sort of losses and challenges. And so with private capital is inherently more risk tolerant. The engineering models of rapid prototyping and experimentation, what we're seeing with SpaceX and Starship today, these technologies are intentionally built to collect data and iteratively develop on top of them. And so we need to create a framework that's better suited for this paradigm, and it's more flexible and it's faster, because that's how development is happening today. And so it's a new cultural shift, and the government's been really slow to adapt and sort of align, from that previous version to a more commercial driven, higher risk tolerance mentality. So, I mean,
It's interesting that on the regulatory front, that was actually one of the cautionary tales that I wanted to bring in, kind of specific to the nuclear industry, I think, because now kind of like what you said, Justice, this is before I was born, and so I'm not an expert in it, but if you look at, if you watch documentaries or read about things like Three Mile Island and the whole shift, at least in the US and kind of globally, away from nuclear, it was less that like things were really unsafe and people were like really at risk. And at least from the Three Mile Island incident, what I took from it and kind of the cautionary tale is it was a situation of the people leading the industry were just completely dismissive of concerns. They were making stuff that was safe, but like when people would bring up concerns, they say, "Oh, that's not an issue. You don't know what you're talking about." Or, "Oh, the government doesn't know what they're doing. They're not keeping up with things. You need to just trust us. We know what's best." And I think that's where the danger lies, because as much as I'm certain in the present world, there's lots of changes that need to be made to the regulatory structure to allow things to move forward faster. And I think generally it's a good thing that we're getting a little bit of that tension, whether it's SpaceX or Blue Origin kind of pushing on, "Hey, FAA, hey, regulators, like you need to get your stuff together." A lot of what they're doing, if you think about the language of it and the mindset of it, is we know what we're doing, you don't. So kind of like let us do our thing. And generally that's good, but you can imagine a world where if something goes wrong, if someone gets hurt, or there's even an increased risk of someone getting hurt, all that "we know what's best" disappears because no one will ever believe you again. And that, at least from my reading of history, that's kind of generally what happened in the nuclear industry, where even though there wasn't maybe a huge real risk, that was the perception. The perception was the people who have been saying, "Trust us," don't deserve our trust. So we're going to completely shut them down and the government's going to completely take over. And so you can imagine a world where we're pushing, 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 and it's all great. And then something goes wrong and all of a sudden we lose all momentum because nobody trusts the industry anymore. And the regulators just like put in this like really heavy hand. And so I think there's a give and take there of pushing in almost like a mindful way, if you will.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I think what's showing up for me in this conversation is that it seems like there's industries that are emerging and pushing limits, and they kind of end up in two different camps. One camp is they're kind of trying to push through an existing industry that has regulation, and they're having to like beat against regulation in order to get past it and evolve and innovate. And then you also have industries that are going into complete blank space with zero regulation and present like completely different challenges. And space almost seems like this interesting one where it has both. Like it has this, like, it has some spaces where there's a lot of regulation, and it's slowing things down. There's, launch licenses and spectrum allocation, and there's all these different games and rules. And then there's also things of like, okay, well, can I go mine an asteroid? Or like, what happens if I set up a base on the moon? Like there are like guidelines, and like it's not that no one's talking about or thinking about this or trying to put something in place, but at the end of the day, it's a pretty open space where like international politics are going to start to come into play. And it's very fascinating to see and think about how can we learn from other industries in both of those different use cases. Like I'm trying to think of some examples. I'm curious if either of you have examples of in either case, maybe the overregulated versus the underregulated, of industries breaking through and get ending up with the right amount of regulation. And what was the avenue to that, and how can the space industry like learn from those things and achieve better. Because I'm thinking of some like bad examples. Like I think, about 5 more years ago, everyone was so excited about flying cars, robotaxi, or flying taxis, all these things. But we knew it was going to be a regulatory battle, but people still thought they could do it, and it still feels like nothing's happening. And so I don't think that that industry has been successful in figuring out the regulatory issues, but like, where can we learn from that success?
All right, so I'm not an expert in this again, but I think an analog that has gone from limited use to wide scale adoption and has a very high track record of safety and success is, aviation. So commercial and cargo and everything has been developed there. It's been around for 120 plus years. We've gone from very, very few people being able to access this capability to many different industries that now rely on, aviation and air travel for, consumer travel to, our defense capabilities for rapid response, to critical medical supplies that support, our supply chains. And it really is integral. And we've created a whole sort of air traffic control system that's supranational, that leverages satellites and terrestrial capabilities and very complex regulatory frameworks that allows, us to be able to move in a dynamic way at a global scale, do so with an incredibly high level of safety and efficiency. I mean, it's way safer to fly than it is to drive a car. So, it really is a preferred method to move. And so I think that there's deeper lessons there. I mean, I would love to, sort of go deeper and try to understand what those are, but off the top of my head, I don't know fully what that would translate to. So.
As a former pilot,
Ah.
I'd love to dig deeper in that, because I think you're 100% right. And the two things that pop to mind that I think are lessons that people can draw. Number one is openness. That's been of the entire industry. There is a program called ASAP, which allows people to basically bring up near miss events or even actual events that did cause problems and kind of volunteer them in a forum that nobody's getting in trouble for. And it was really great. They publish notices kind of, I think it was monthly. I forget how often they do it. But when I was in flying units, we would like put them on the bathroom stalls where you could read these horror stories of like, oh my gosh, this almost happened because somebody like forgot this thing. And that openness around mistakes is one of the critical elements of safety in aviation. And then I think the other thing that's been really critical over like the last 50 years is the human factors side of things, in that it's not just the technical piece. The big difference as to why things are so safe now is because back in the 70s and 80s, there were a series of airline accidents that were just dumb. They were just no, there was no, like literally, I think. Two plane crashes were caused because of faulty or burnt out landing gear light. Like literally the light in the cockpit was burnt out, and the entire crew became so fixated on that thing that in one case, the autopilot was kicked off and nobody realized it, and so the plane flew into the ground. And in the other case, the plane ran out of fuel. And those kinds of accidents caused this major focus on human factors, crew resource management. And so I think as an industry, it's though we're pushing the technical bounds of things, realizing that as the industry matures, it's the technical side of things isn't what's going to cause problems. It's going to be the human side of things, and starting to put that, at the forefront. And then the other thing that I would mention about, lessons to regarding regulation that I've seen at two different companies that's worked really well. So not industry-wide, but in recent terms, and that's worked well for two different very successful companies, is really engaging with regulators in an honest and open way of saying from very early on, this is what we're trying to do. Make them don't go into the situation thinking that it's a conflict, thinking that you're going to be fighting. Go into it trying to embrace the regulators and get them on your side and get them to work with you. Find people who will help you weave your way through the web. rather than just saying we gotta break through.
Yeah, the idea of move fast and break things in space, I think, is not an appropriate analogy. You should not bring that over from the software world. There are real world consequences if you do that. There are companies that have taken that approach, and they've actually been relatively successful. But I do think it risks these bigger consequences that you will have spillover effects. And so, being proactive and working with, the government shaping the policies and shaping the direction is the longer term, more strategic, more sustainable approach. Fully agree there.
This is great. Thank you both so much. In this discussion, some things that I feel like we covered well here was in how we can learn from other industries that have gone through kind of an innovative, trailblazing period. We talked about how that's often built on the shoulders of government funding, and that kind of created ecosystems that were able to support each other, and then spoke a fair amount about how government provides standards and regulation and how much of that is good, and how we can evolve within have those regulations and standards evolve. And I think some key lessons that we took away were considering human factors, and then also just a big one of like how do we be transparent in the issues that we're likely to face and the regulations that we need to work with, and how do we solve those problems by engaging with those regulators in a very open, honest, and early way. So yeah, if unless I missed anything, please chime in. But otherwise, I think this was a really fun conversation, and looking forward to the next one.